Lita, thanks so much for your kind exaggerations. It's a cover to be here. The Rabbi, thank you. And it's exciting to be with all of you this morning. Purim is a little more than a week away. And it's exciting to get together and prepare and think together about Purim. Purim is such an extraordinary day. We often think of it as Yom Tov for children. We often think of Megillas Esther as a story for children. And certainly it is a Yom Tov for children. And at the same time, after a moment's reflection, it's clearly not only a Yom Tov for children. The extraordinary amounts of depth, one of the great moments in Jewish history. And at the same time, it often slips away. It comes and goes. There's so many mitzvahs, masos, so much to be busy with. And the way to, as Rav Kook taught us, Ein Kedusha B'lav Hachana. I want to really grab the opportunities that this extraordinary Yom Tov, the first Yom Tov D'Rabbanan, one of the first mitzvahs D'Rabbanan Chazal ever created. We want to grab the opportunities that it presents to tap into the potential for our growth that Purim presents. We need to work in advance. We need to put in the practical and physical work of preparing the Suda and packing. Mishloach Manos will come as well. But to take this opportunity on a Sunday morning to spend a few minutes on the intellectual, the emotional, the spiritual preparation, think about the ideas of Purim. Shechter is fond of noting that over 1,000 years ago, in the great yeshivas of Bavel, in the period of the Gaonim, Minig Shtei yeshivas were that they said Tachanun on Purim. Why? Because of Purim is such an extraordinary day of Kabbalah's HaTfilah, such an extraordinary day of our tefillahs being answered. How can we not fully invest in our tefillah? How can we not enhance our Shmona Esrei with the Tachanun? It speaks to a different perspective on the depth of Purim. Or let's say for a moment, everyone loves starting with dessert, so we'll start with the last source on the Marmakomos in front of you. I should say in advance that the Marmakomos are entirely optional. Some people like text, some people do not. If you're not a text person, feel free to just listen. If you enjoy looking inside, by all means, you're invited. The last Marmakom is the Rambam towards the very, very end of Hilchas Megillah. Rambam never has a segment that's less than four prakim, so maybe as a smaller topic, he'll combine them. So he has Megillah and Chanukah together. Each one is two prakim. So here we are at the end of this two prakim of Hilchas Megillah. He closes the halachas with an agadic note and a surprising one. Quotes from Yerushalmi that Megillah has more lasting power than any other of the Sifrei Nevi'im and Ksuvim. Nevi'im and Ksuvim will not have the same status. There are Sidim Libate Limos and Mashiach. Once Mashiach comes, Nevi'im Ksuvim, Yehoshua, and Shoftim, and Malachim, and Yeshaya, Tehillim even, Mishlei, they're not going to have the same status after Mashiach comes. Chutz Megillas Esther. Megillas Esther is unique. Megillas Esther stands apart from the rest. Harei kayemes kachamish echum sheitora, ukahalacha shatara shwapesh, she'en b'tein le'olam. It has the same staying power, the same immutability as Chumash, as Bereishis Shemos, V'yikram Ibn Dvarim, has the same staying power as Halachas of Torah Shvapa. There's something remarkable and unique about Purim that we can tap into if we take the time to think about it. And it's so often the case, we're going to turn for a moment from these big questions, we're going to do a deep dive into some details. Because it's so often the case in learning that questions that seem to at first be very granular, questions about the details, often when you investigate them and begin to pull on the threads, we end up with the answers as our big vistas. So we're going to try some of that right now. We're actually going to turn from what seem like big philosophical questions. We're going to dig for a few minutes into what seem like the most technical details of the halachas of Purim. Of the four mitzvahs of Purim, Mishloach Manos, Sudam, Matanos Lavyonim, probably Megillah seems the most halachically dense and the most technical. Within Megillah, we could sort of divide the halachas of Megillah into what we do with it and how we create it, the item itself. There's the Kriyas HaMegillah, in which we all participate, and then there's the Baal Kori's reading, we're all listening, and then there's what seems like the more remote, the more obscure half of the halachas of Megillah, how you write a Megillah. And then even within that, I think the more accessible part seems like the actually writing the Megillah. We're going to do a deep dive not only to Megillah, not into the construction of the Megillah, but into the background. how you prep the parchment, how you bind the Megillah, and we're going to discover, after a few minutes of investigation, as I said before, questions about the details will soon open very broad vistas in terms of appreciating the halacha, the hashkafa, and the history of Purim. Hopefully that will enable us not only to appreciate Purim, but to tap into the intellectual appreciation, intellectual understanding, hopefully allow us to tap into the spiritual and emotional depth potential that Purim has for us. So let's take a look. You know, in the Megillah is mostly story. Megillah's Esther, the Sefer Esther, mostly tells the story that we're familiar with. There are 10 prakim. Towards the very end of the 9th parak, after the whole denouement, and the Jews are saved, the Jews are safe, the enemies are eliminating. So towards the end of the 9th parak, the narrative becomes somewhat halachic. Because after the Nes is done, you hear about the writing of the Megillah, and you hear about the establishment of the Yontif, different stages, not for now, different stages. There's a grassroots movement towards the Yontif, then there was a formal top-down Takana Midrabanim. And here we are towards the very end of the 9th parak in source number 2. V'tichtov Esther ha-malka bas Avichayel Mordechai Yehudi is called Tokef. They wrote down this powerful story. L'kayem es igeres ha-purim hazos ha-shenis. They created a letter of Purim, an igeres ha-purim. You skip down 3 psukim, pasuk lamed beis. What's in source number 2? Source number 2 in pasuk of the few psukim at the end of the 9th parak of the Megillah. Pasuk chav tes, the Megillah refers to itself as Igeres HaPurim, a letter. In Pasuk Lamed Beis, the last of the 4 psukim in source number 2, Umamar Esther Kiyem Divrei HaPurim Ha'ela, this was established, V'nichtav Ba Sefer, and it was written in a Sefer. So, two different self-descriptions, self-stylings of the Megillah. The Megillah refers to itself casually as a letter, as an Igeres. Then a 3 psukim later refers to itself more formally as a Sefer. The same way we refer to Sefer Torah. So the Amoraim were sensitive to this tension. What exactly is the Megillah? Is the Megillah telling us that it's a formal document? It's a Sefer? Or is it a little more casual? It's a letter. Lahavdil in our language, maybe we would say, is this a 5-paragraph email? Or is this a quick text? What exactly is the Megillah? The Megillah is telling us about itself. To take a look back at the first source, this is a Gemara in Maseches Megillah. I noticed this morning my typo. If you want to look things up afterwards, it's your Testament Aleph, not your Testament Beis. The Gemara in the second parak of Maseches Megillah. I'm Rabbi Chelba, I'm Rav Chaim Bar Gurya, I'm a Rav. I have some pedigree here. This goes a comment of Rav that was passed through the generations. Megillah, Nikrei Sefer, V'Nikrei Sigeres. Again, source number 1. Rav noted this tension. Rav noted this paradox. The Megillah calls itself a formal Sefer, but also calls itself a more casual, informal Igeres. So how do you understand that? So Rav said, well, Nikrei Sefer, on the one hand, it has qualities of a Sefer, of any other Sefer of the Tanakh, of a Sefer Torah, Shem Tefara HaPechute Pishtem Psula, that a Megillah doesn't fit on one piece of, no animal is large enough that its hide can fit an entire Megillah. So typically, you're going to have many, many pages, pieces of parchment that are sewn together. So how is that stitching, how is that binding done? So in a Sefer Torah, you bind it, not only is the paper, so to speak, the parchment, is of animal origin, it's not plant-based paper, but the binding also is done with fibers from an animal, gidim. So the Rav says, when you sew together, when you bind together Megillah as well, it's like a Sefer, and tefar b'chute pishtem psula. If you use linen, if you use plant-based thread, no good. Like a Sefer. On the other hand, Nikra Sigeres, not fully a Sefer. So we're in this in-between space. Shem hitilva shlosha chute gidin kshera. If 3 out of the threads that you used were animal-based, that's good enough. So it's sort of half a Sefer. It's not fully a Sefer. It's a half a Sefer, half a Nigeres. That's how Rav understands this paradox. Megillah is trying to tell us it's somewhere in the middle. A little bit of animal binding, but not fully. Okay. So if we would stop right here, say, okay, so next time I want to participate in a Megillah making workshop, I'll know what to bring along. I'll bring along a few Gidin, but not as many as I would if I were making a Sefer Torah. Here's where it gets interesting. Tosfos points out that there's a Gemara earlier, 2.5 blot earlier, that seems to not fit so well with this one. The last, and the reason why it's 2.5 blot earlier, is I told you this first Gemara we take a look at in the second parak of Maseches Megillah, in the context of the Halachas of Megillah, Mikra Megillah, Ksivas HaMegillah. 2.5 blot earlier, we're back in the end of the first parak of Megillah. At the end of the first parak is a fascinating singularity in Shas. Every once in a while, you know, the Gemara will shift from talking about topics to taking to Medrash mode, Medrash is an organization of Torah Shbal Peh, rather than topically, Al Seder HaPsukim, going through Pasuk by Pasuk by Pasuk and commenting on the Psukim. So every once in a while, the Gemara will get into that mode briefly, about Shimshon, this story, that story, by Yaakov Avinu, probably the longest span of Medrash in all of Shas, all Talmud Bavli, I believe, the last 6-7 blot of Maseches Megillah is an entire Medrash Esther, from beginning to end. Towards the very end of this segment of Medrash Esther, we get up to these psukim. As you said, the end of the ninth parak are these halachic psukim. So after many of the Midrasha comments that we're familiar with from about the Megillah are culled from those 6-7 blot, towards the very end, we shift to discussion of the halachas. So take a look at one line. A line that's fascinating regards to what your first name is. Here, number 3. Maseches Megillah Tazayim Ubeiz. The Gemara points to another pasuk in this zone. Divrei Shalom Vemes, words of peace and truth. The Megillah refers to itself as words of peace and truth. Sounds poetic. And if you look back at source number 2, you'll see that that's right over here. Pasuk Lamed. Vayishlach Sfarim HaKol HaYudim, HaShevav Esrim Me'am Medina, HaChus HaKashar. They send these Sfarim to the entire breadth of the Persian Empire, which was thousands of miles wide at that point, stretches from Africa to India. Divrei Shalom Vemes. Megillah refers to itself as words of peace and truth, which is what does that mean? Words of peace and truth. Usually if someone says, honestly, but usually if someone protests and insists that he's telling you the truth, that doesn't make us trust him more. Well, what's Megillah saying? This is true. Believe what you read here. What does that mean? It doesn't mean this is true as opposed to false. It must be giving it something about the quality of what's being said. So the Gemara comments here on Tezayim and Pez, Divrei Shalom Vemes, Amar Rabbi Tanchum, V'Amri La Amar Rabbi Asi. The Gemara has a comment, we're not sure to whom to attribute it. One of the two Amaram, either Rabbi Tanchum, whose name I am, of course, incredibly proud to share, or Rabbi Asi, one of the Amaram of Eretz Yisrael commented, Milame, that this actually teaches me another very technical halacha in the world of Megillah construction, or even more specifically, the raw material, preparing the raw materials for a Megillah. Milame shetzricha sirtut ka'amita shel Torah. Just as when you write the truth of Torah, you need to prepare the parchment first with the sirtut, with scoring, so too when you write a Megillah. What is that? So if you turn, what is sirtut? I didn't bring along a take the Sefer Torah of the Heichal right now. You take a look instead at the top of the second side of the page. The graphics are intentionally bad enough that hopefully if you look carefully, you can see the lines. We're used to a lined paper where you write on top of the line. When you write here you have a mezuzah and a Megillah, where the lines are right above the letters. The letters hang down from the lines. If you can see carefully, depending on some of you may, like me, have to take off your glasses, you'll see those lines that go across the entire parchment. Above every line of writing, there's the sofer, before he began writing, took a blade and scored a series of parallel straight lines, and he used that, made a line, instead of lined paper, lined parchment. So your writing comes out nice and smooth. It's not just an aesthetic issue, it's a halacha. It's a halacha. A halacha that's expanded even to Megillah based on this drasha. Divrei Shalom Vemes. Divrei Shalom Vemes. So Rashi on the Gemara says, there you go. What does that mean? Ka'amita shel Torah, just like the truth of Torah, when written down requires sirtut, so too a mezuzah. Excuse me, so too a Megillah requires sirtut. So Rashi says, yeah, that means, well, what's the truth of Torah? Is it Sefer Torah? Right, Sefer Torah. Take Sefer Torah out. Rashi says, open up your Sefer Torah. You'll see when you write a Sefer Torah, the sofer first scores the parchment, draws those lines, cuts those lines with a blade before writing. Anything strike you as curious about that? Putting the pieces together.
Yeah. Seems like you were reading like a Torah, not like a letter.
Fantastic. See here. So let's unpack. What's your name?
Harvey.
So Harvey says number one. The first Gemara we saw in Daf Yutes, verse number one, had said that the Megillah is half and half. It's a little bit like a Sefer, but not fully like a Sefer, right? So it doesn't require quite as much binding as a Sefer does. And here, there's no hesitation. It's a full equation between the Megillah and the Sefer Torah. We didn't say, well, Sefer Torah needs a lot of scoring, and Megillah needs a little bit. There's no hesitation. Problem number one. Problem number two,
what's the Shalom?
What's the Shalom? Where did that go? Now, I'm not sure. The Gemara does not actually address it here. It's an interesting question. Shalom might perhaps refers to the content. Now, it could be that the Megillah is saying that when you think about the content of what's being presented, there's strife and there's fright and there's fear in the story and there is violence in the story. But overall, the Megillah is describing the total arc of this story is ultimately a story of peace, of peacefulness. People were saved, HaKadosh Baruch Hu saved us. We would have said that about Emes as well, except we wondered that, you know, the Megillah doesn't have to tell me that it's true. So instead the Gemara says, well, there's this equation. But the question is, equation to what? So number one, if we're drawing an equation, say, for Torah, why was it that in source number one, the equation was halfway, and here in source number three, the equation is full. Moreover, why do we need a second, Tosis asks, why do we need a second term to tell me to equate Megillah to Sefer Torah? We did that already. We had the word Sefer. Looking back at these psukim in source number two, we have three descriptions of the Megillah. Number one, Igeras HaPurim. Number two, Divrei Shalom V'Emes. Number three, Sefer. Why do you need two different terms that both tell me, oh, Megillah is like a Sefer Torah? Something doesn't add up. So we have thought up another term, and as you point out, it seems like a very loaded term with the Shalom as well. And they're two different terms, and here it's only a halfway equation, here it's full. How do you make sense of it? So Tosfos, there are two approaches. So Tosfos says, my approach is, I reject Rashi. Rabbeinu Tam, Rashi's grandson, says, Rashi's approach is very difficult. How can you tell me that Divrei Shalom V'Emes is a reference to Sefer Torah? Well, why do I need two different phrases? And make up your mind, is it a full equation or partial equation? Rabbeinu Tam says, the answer must be that, and perhaps the third question is, what's with it? Amita Shal Torah. So that very dramatic term, the truth of the Torah. It goes back to what Shalom, what's Emes. So Rabbeinu Tam says, no. The answer is, Rabbeinu Tam thinks, we're not talking about Sefer Torah. As a matter of fact, he says, I don't think even Sefer Torah requires it. He says, only mezuzah. The Gemara Menachos is discussing in the world of Hilchos Tam, Sefer Torah Tefillin Mezuzah, tells us explicitly, mezuzah requires Sirtut, Tefillin does not. Sefer Torah is left ambiguous. So Rabbeinu Tam says, approach number one to this paradox, here's my answer. The reason why there's so many differences between source one and source two, they're not both talking about Sefer Torah. Sefer Torah, the word Sefer tells me Sefer Torah. Is Megillah like a Sefer Torah? Halfway. The other source, Amita Shal Torah, Divrei Shalom V'Emes, is talking about mezuzah. Ah, why is mezuzah the truth of Torah? Right? Tosfos says, well, after all, mezuzah is obviously a very small selection of the Chumash with a particular focus on the fundamentals of faith. You believe in one God, mitzvos, a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hafta Hashem Elokecha, Eretz Yisrael, reward and punishment. So Tosfos says, Amita Shal Torah, Divrei Shalom V'Emes, that's comparing mezuzah not to Sefer Torah. That's comparing Megillah not to Sefer Torah, but to mezuzah. Okay. Rabbeinu Tam says, I've solved my problem. Now I understand why I need two different terms, because Sefer is comparing Megillah to Sefer Torah. Divrei Shalom V'Emes is a different term, talk about a different idea. comparing Megillah to a mezuzah. And that's why source number four, the top of the second side of your page, I gave you pictures of a Megillah and a mezuzah. Even Rabbeinu Tam agrees that Megillah and mezuzah require full sirtum. Okay. So we're left wondering, what was Rashi thinking? Rabbeinu Tam had rejected the opinion of his grandfather, Rashi, as he often does throughout Shas. He said, it doesn't fit. It doesn't fit. Okay, I'll have to work out a different, I'll have to reinterpret the Gemara so that all the pieces hang together. So what are we going to do with Rashi? How are we going to understand Rashi? And again, three problems. Let's just remember where we are. Problem number one is that, according to Rashi, the Megillah is providing us, the Gemara is highlighting two different terms that seem to be doing the same thing. It seems redundant. Why do I need the term Sefer and the term Divrei Shalom V'Emes to both say the same thing, that Megillah is like a Sefer Torah? Problem number one. Problem number two, make up your mind, is it fully like a Sefer Torah, Divrei Shalom V'Emes, or is it half and half, Sefer versus Igeres? And question number three is the, I neglect to get your name, Donnie. So Donnie pointed out the MS, the Shalom, how do those terms hang together? So the Brisker Rav, Rav Elphel Soloveitchik, suggests that we can find, maybe we can make sense of Rashi by looking at someone who agreed with Rashi. Rabbeinu Tam disagreed with Rashi. Two generations after Rashi, Rabbeinu Tam rejects him. But there's another Talmud Chacham who also lived around two generations after Rashi, but lived hundreds of miles away, and may not have had access, actually, to Pirush Rashi and Gemara, but who in this situation happens on this issue seems to agree with Rashi and may give us more insight into his opinion. The Rambam, who lived in Spain and North Africa and briefly in Eretz Yisrael, and the end of his life in Egypt, was roughly contemporary of Rabbeinu Tam. And you take a look at what he writes, the Brisker Rav points out, Rambam seems like he's on board with Rashi. Let's take a look. Hilchos Megillah, Halacha, here is source number five, Rambam Hilchos Megillah, Perek Beis Halacha Tes, a kos vinas ha Megillah, ele b'diyo ala gevil ala chach, only write the Megillah with the official D.O. ink, on particular types of parchment, kasei for Torah, like kasei for Torah. Shricha sirtut, k'tara atzma, and it needs sirtut like the Torah itself. Sounds here like he's on board with the Rav. Doesn't say like a mezuzah. Moreover, it's even, he's even more explicit, that this did not make it, this other source did not make it onto the page, I apologize. You take a look at the, this is what we're looking at, source number five is Halacha Sapur, Halacha Megillah. If you look back sort of at the mothership, so to speak, look back at the Halacha of Sefer Torah, Tefillah, and Mezuzah, in the first chapter, the Rambam is explicit that Sefer Torah and Mezuzah both require sirtut. Tefillah not, the Sefer Torah and Mezuzah both do. So number one, Rashi is not alone, the Rambam agrees with him. And then the plot thickens. So the Rambam is presenting the same opinion, that somehow sirtut is something that's conveyed from Sefer Torah to Mezuzah, to Megillah. A few funny things, though. A few funny things going on. Number one, the source in front of us. Let's read again. Let's take a look at, and let's read all the way through. And he comes to this on Megillah, source number five. He comes to Megillah, El Abidyah, El Abidyah, El Cloth. You can only write the Megillah on particular types of ink, with particular types of ink, on particular type of parchment, just like a Sefer Torah. Kit, Sefer Torah. Number one. Number two, Tzricha Sirtut, Ketara Atzmei, needs. It needs the parchment needs to be prepared like a Torah itself. And then moving on to Halacha Yud Aleph, the next paragraph here in source number five, we haven't yet seen the first halacha that we learned about, which was the binding. Let's take a look. HaMegillah Tzricha Tefira, Achi Yihyu Kol Orasei Megillah Achas. Rama says you can't just have a stack of sheets of parchment. It needs to be a single whole unit. Obviously, it's not going to fit on one piece of parchment, one skin. So you're gonna stitch it together, and when you stitch it together, then it constitutes a single unit of a Megillah. And how do you do it? The Einan Nisperes Ela Begidin Kesefer Torah. He said you have to stitch it with animal fibers like a Sefer Torah. Goes on to say, as we saw in the Gemara, doesn't have to be fully, but at least some of the composition has, some of the binding has to include Gidin like a Sefer Torah. Notice anything strange about the language of the Rambam?
Waste it in the negative.
How do you mean?
Meaning, instead of an alpha testing, go through this on Megillah B'diyo.
Oh, that's interesting.
And the same thing, by the way, the end of Yudal. It seems to define what you don't do except for X.
That's a great point. Does he? Is he always negative?
I have no idea.
No, even within the source.
No. I mean, it's reached up to your...
Right. So they're switching. And specifically, I appreciate your fine reading. And particularly, let's even zero in more. When we think about the ways in which he equates Megillah to a Sefer Torah, is he always negative, or is he sometimes negative, sometimes positive?
It seems to be a mix.
Right. You don't write it except with the writing. Don't write it except with the right parchment, like in Sefer Torah. And then Halach Yidav, you don't stitch it except with Gidin. But when it comes out Sirta, it's positive. It needs Sirta.
Maybe was that a shadow of any time? Maybe Gidin needed Sirta any time.
Maybe. Do you see another difference between the way he presents Sirta and the way he presents the other Dinim? I underlined it, right. What did I underline? Right, he switched up the language. When he talks about the ink, when he talks about the parchment, and when he comes back at the end to talk about the stitching, the language uses, it's like a Sefer Torah. When he talks about the Sirtot, he says it's like the Torah itself. So a number of differences in the language, the way he presents this unique din of Sirtot. Moreover, so something is afoot. He is presenting Sirtot differently, much as the Gemara presented Sirtot differently. Moreover, when you look back at the source, again, I apologize, it's not in front of you, when he talks in the halachas of Sefer Torah Tefillin Mezuzah, he says, halacha Moshe Sinai, Kadosh Baruch Hu told Moshe Rabbeinu Har Sinai, that there's a need for sirtut by Sefer Torah, by Mezuzah, but not by Tefillin. And you expect him to stop there. That's what God told Moshe. Done. But he feels the need to give you a reason. He says, you know why Tefillin are excluded? I would have thought they were excluded because those were the instructions. He says, no, they're excluded because there's a reason. Because they're covered. So I'm not sure what you need a reason for. If you're looking for a reason, who cares whether it's covered, it's uncovered. I mean, mezuzah is usually covered as well, but you could, and we sometimes encourage, use of a transparent case when possible. Tefillin, obviously, are mandated to be in an opaque leather case. But what do you need a reason for? Why does it matter? What's going on? Let's go back to that language. Kesefer Torah versus Ketorah Atzma. Kesefer Torah versus Ketorah Atzma. The binding, the stitching, the ink, the parchment, the stitching, those are all like a Sefer Torah. But the Sirtut, the preparing the parchment, that's Ketorah Atzma. What's the difference? The first question is, it sounds like we're looking at two different aspects of Sefer Torah. It's not as Rabbi Tam said, you know, one pasuk is comparing things to Megillah to Sefer Torah, one's comparing to Mezuzah. It's more subtle. They both are comparisons to Mezuzah, but to Sefer Torah, but different aspects of Sefer. There's the Sefer Torah and there's Torah itself. So here's one key that can unlock everything. It's here in Yeshiva Lori Masachet Gittin. And there's a sugya in the first paragraph of Gittin about Sirtot, about Vav Amud Beis. That happens to be one of the places where Rabbi Tam launches his attack on Rashi. It's a Tosfos Menachos, and it's a Tosfos on Megillah Davam, and Gittin Davam and Beis. So the Gemara there says something fascinating. The Gemara there says that even if you're writing a couple of words of Torah, of Chumash, you may already require a Sirta. Take a piece of parchment, and I'm just going to write a pasuk or two, maybe even less, I already require a Sirta. It's interesting. So you seem puzzled, right? So Sirtut isn't just about creating a Sefer Torah. It's about writing down words of the Torah. Even if I'm not getting to the finish line, I'm creating a full Sefer Torah. So the Brisker Rav says, now I get it. Now I get it. With that in mind, I begin to appreciate the Rambam's language, and it's going to open up halachic details about, again, as I said, our deep dive is almost done, halachic details about Megillah construction, that's going to start to open up bigger issues also. Because Brisker says as follows. Rashi and the Rambam are telling us that, yes, two different Gemaras compare Megillah to Sefer Torah in two different ways, two different terms, Sefer versus Dirashal Mi'emes, two different degrees of comparison. Is it only partial or is it full? Because we're comparing Megillah to Sefer Torah on two different levels. One is K'Sefer Torah. I'm creating a physical document. I'm creating a Sefer Torah. There are rules. If you want to create a Sefer Torah, that could be in the Aron, a Sefer Torah that, with which you fulfill the mitzvah of writing a Sefer Torah. That will have Kedusha. That can be used for Kriyas HaTorah. If you want to create the physical document, the physical object that we call a Sefer Torah, it has to be written on a particular type of parchment with a particular type of ink and stitched, bound in a particular type of way. If we're going to talk about the way you create the physical document of a Megillas Esther, okay, so then that's K'Sefer Torah. What ink do you use? What parchment do you use? And how do you bind it and how do you stitch it? That's what the Rambam refers to, looking at source number 5, as K'Sefer Torah. But the book, the item, the physical document of Sefer Torah. And that was the content, that was the focus of the first Gemara. Number one, where we had compared, is it a letter or is it a book, a document? Is it a Igeris or is it a Sefer? Those are both terms that capture the physical document. What thing have I produced? And in terms of that, you said the term is Sefer. On the other hand, you have the term Igeris. So the answer is, in terms of physical documents, one foot in, one foot out. Is a physical Megillas Esther really like a Sefer Torah? Sort of not. Right? Let's make this a little more tangible. You know, the differences that the Gemara is talking about in terms of how you stitch it, we're not necessarily so attuned to. But let me give you something else that at least captures the same idea. When you look at a Megillah and you look at a Sefer Torah, do they look the same? Sort of. Right? How do they look the same? So they look the same. Well, they're on that same type of parchment, the same ink. They're long. On the other hand, the rollers, right? You don't have the Atzichan. When you look at the physical manifestation, physical document, the Megillah versus the Sefer Torah, well, it looks sort of like a Sefer Torah, but not exactly. It's a little smaller usually, okay. It doesn't have the Atzichan, but it mostly looks the same. It's parchment, ink, okay. Not bound like a book. It's long, as you said, right? So the physical document is sort of like a Sefer Torah. K'Sefer Torah, somewhat. And that's the point of the first Gemara we explored in Daf Yutes, source number one. Yeah?
Does this explain why Megillat Esther, when we read it at Hanukkah, unlike other Haftarahs or other Megillot that we read during the year? That's one question. And if there isn't the clap, are you allowed to read it?
Okay. So I thought you were going to actually, what we do, there is a requirement, there is a mitzvah of reading the Megillah. Right now we're focused on the construction of the Megillah. Construction of the Megillah is a step to enable the mitzvah of reading the Megillah, which is very different from the minhag of reading the other Megillahs. That's absolutely true. And moreover, when you read the Megillah, so you've probably seen, we have a practice, not halachically required, we have a practice that you don't have the rollers. Instead, you sort of, you'll see sometimes the Balkari is very busy folding and unrolling, and then Shulchan Aruch, I tell you, that minhag is an expression of this term that we're focused on right now. Igeris. It's a letter. So, technically, the fact that it's a letter means that it's not constructed quite like a Sefer Torah. It doesn't have, right, we notice it doesn't have the rollers. The Gemara is talking about the fact that it's stitched a little bit differently. It's sort of like a Sefer, not fully like a Sefer. And we even present it, we lay it out, and that works well with this lack of rollers, we lay it out like a letter. Sort of, those who remember aerograms. But now let's turn it around. But Sirtut, he already said Sirtut, as the Gemara in Megitin says, I'm writing just a few words of Chumash, not creating a full Sefer Torah. It still needs Sirtut. Sirtut comes from a different pasuk. Divrei Shalom is words of peace and truth. It's like Amitasha, the truth of Torah. The truth of Torah. And the Rambam, again, going back to source number 5, when he spoke about Sirtut, it needs Sirtut like a Sefer Torah. It needs Sirtut like Torah itself. So Briskerup says, the first set of rules were about the physical construction, the first dimension, the physical construction of a Sefer Torah. What ink do you use? What parchment do you use? How do you bind it? In terms of the physical construction of the Sefer Torah, Megillah is sort of, the physical document is sort of like a Sefer Torah, not fully. But in terms of the quality of the text, the content, there, Ketorah, Adivrei Shalom ve'emes, Megillah is words of peace and truth. It is as profoundly true as the Chumash itself. It's as lastingly true as the Chumash itself. The presentation, the physical document, is one foot in, one foot out. The physical document is sort of like a Sefer Torah, but not fully. Sefer, but also Igeris. A book, but a letter. The other dimension of Megillah, in terms of the content, in terms of the what's the quality of this text that that Esther and Mordechai composed, it's Ketorah Atzma. It is Divrei Shalom V'Emes. Shalom is certainly a description of the content of what's going on. Emes also is a description not of the physical presentation, but of the quality of the text. And he says that's why our questions begin to fall into, technical questions begin to fall into place. We understand why, even for Rashi and the Rambam, you need two different terms in to be used in equating Megillah to Sefer Torah. Sefer equates it in terms of a physical Megillah Esther is somewhat like a physical Sefer Torah. Divrei Shalom V'Emes refers to the quality of the language, the quality of the text, however it's presented. Now, and let me take a question in just one moment. So I want to show you, just to drive home this idea, and I want to hear your question. Just to drive home this idea, Pitzker Rav points out an absolutely beautiful indication of this. Because you might be wondering, well, Sirtut also sounds like, I don't know, the way you prepare, it seems very tactical, the way you prepare the parchment, that maybe is a quality of physical document. I mentioned the Gemara again speaks about even a few words requiring Sirtut, not just a full sefer. Take a look at this. Take a look at this Yerushalmi. He mostly studied the Talmud Bavli, but there's a parallel Talmud Yerushalmi that was authored in the Eretz Yisrael. Source number six. Rabbi Chelva Rabbi Yosef Hashem Reblezer. These Amoran pointed out, and some of them are the same names that appear in source number one, this is a parallel to source number three. Namarkan Divrei Shalom V'Emes. This Yerushalmi is also wondering, well, what's with that word, the terminology? What's it? Seems so rich and poetic. What does it mean that the Megillah is words of peace and truth? The first thing the Yerushalmi says is, well, here you see that term, truth. Where else do we hear in Tanakh, we hear the term truth? A pasuk in Mishlei. Namar Lahalan, over there in Mishlei, Emes Kenei Ba'al Timkar. Acquire truth and don't sell it away. Amass our learning, share it with others, but don't let it just drift away. Don't forget, don't make sure to review, make sure to remember, retain what you've learned. Number one, what do we mean by MS over there? We're referring to just the mezuzah? We're referring to, presumably, the entirety of the Torah. The number of this Yerushalmi seems very aligned with Rashi and Rambam. Yerushalmi, MS means Torah. Number two, Emes Kenei Ba'al Timkar. Is that about writing a Sefer Torah or about the content of Torah? Content. Okay. And then watch this. The Yerushalmi goes on to say there are two specific applications of the fact that Megillah is like the Emes of Torah. Mazut, the first one should be familiar. Mazut Tzricha Sirtut, Avzut Tzricha Sirtut. Right? Just like Torah requires Sirtut, so too Megillah, you'll know it's the Samach, a different spelling, a different dialect. Then here comes another one. The Bavli only had one application. It's like Amita Shoto requires Sirtut. Yerushalmi adds, Mazu nitna lihi daresh, Avzu nitna lihi daresh. When the text of Chumash, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave the five Chumashim to Moshe Rabbeinu, the Nevuah, over the course of 40 years, from Mamre Har Sinai all the way through to the end of Moshe Rabbeinu's life, he conveys to him, among other things, the entire text of Chamisha Chumashim Tov. Bereishis Shmos Be'ikam Be'edvar. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Moshe Rabbeinu up front, I'm giving you a text that I'm telling you in advance, there are multiple layers of meaning embedded in this text. And here are the tools that you will use and that Tamei Chacham and future generations will use to mine the text with those additional layers of meaning. Kal v'chomer, Zeir HaShavah, the tools of Drasha. The Pshuto Shal Mikra, is the first layer of meaning, and then there are additional layers of meaning, drasha, that we extract, we mine the text to discover what are those added nuggets that Kadosh Baruch Hu left us. Rabbi Akiva makes drashas, Rabbi Tarfon makes drashas, Shmuel makes drashas. The Mishnah and Gemara are full of these additional layers of meaning. Says Yerushalmi, Divrei Shalom v'Emes, just like you can darshan, Bereishis, Shemot, Ha'ikar, Midbar, Devarim, it's a text that's embedded with added layers of meaning, waiting to be discovered. So too Esther. He says, let me ask you a question. Nitna lihi daresh. This is a darshanable text, so to speak. This is a text that's built with, baked in with multiple layers of meaning, meant to be extracted through drasha. Is that a quality of a physical document? Did Rabbi Akiva open up a kosher sefer Torah to darshan? No. It's clearly not a quality of physical document. It's the quality of the text. This text, however it's presented, whether on parchment or on a screen, the text of Sefer Bereishis, Sefer Shemot, Sefer Vayikra, the text of Chumash has this quality of Nitna Lihi Daresh. So too the text of Esther, Sefer Esther, so to speak, however it's presented on parchment, on paper, or on your phone, the text, that collection of words, the text of Esther is Divrei Shalom V'Emes. The text of Esther is Nitna Lihi Daresh. It has that same quality as Chumash. And as I said before, there's back in Rashi and the Rambam, the response to Rabbeinu Tam is in terms of, you want to know how do you resolve the difficulty, in terms of the physical document, one foot in, one foot out. It's sort of like a Sefer Torah, but not fully. We notice the fact that it doesn't have the Atzei Chaim. The Gemara points to the fact that, well, the stitching is a little bit differently, the ink is the same, the parchment is the same, physical document, sort of like, mostly like a Sefer Torah, but not fully. In terms of the quality of the text, absolutely, without any hesitations, without any qualifications, 100% Divrei Shalom V'Emes. We'll take a question, and then afterwards we're going to pivot back to where we began. What we just did right now, and we'll take a question in a moment, you've been waiting very patiently, thank you so much. What we just did right now, just to recap, we had opened with some larger questions about meaning and philosophy, and then we said, let's do a deep dive into, I promise, very, very, super, super technical, right? Mitzvah Megillah, writing the Megillah, I mean, writing the Megillah, but praying the raw materials of the Megillah. Seems so abstruse, seems so obscure, and yet, as we said before, it's so often the case in learning that small tactical questions that you pull on them and they bring you in the answers to big vistas. We're already beginning to see that big vista. Right? You take it to the next step. We're already beginning to see the fascinating, even to the halachic structure of Megillah, that sort of there's an interesting paradox. The physical document of the Megillah, it's sort of a Sefer Torah, sort of not. In terms of the quality of what it's telling me, absolutely, fully, Divrei Shalom V'Emes, with no qualifications, it is fully, it's a story of Shalom, and the quality of the story, or the quality of the text, is one of Emes. It's as profoundly true, as multiple layers of truth, as Chamisha Chumshei Torah. We saw that Rambam, it's also as, it will survive, it's as enduring, more than the other Sarm of Nach, like Chamisha Chumshei. The text is profoundly fully like Torah, even though the physical document is sort of a half and half. We'll think about where that takes us in the world of Hashkaf and history in a moment. But first, the question.
I have a more technical question.
Please.
So, with the series we just talked about, what about the order in which you can write it? Can you rewrite this like a
mezuzah? Oh, that's an interesting question. I'm not sure. It's a good point. When you're writing mezuzah, it has to be kasidra. Right? A mezuzah needs to be in order, which is why a mistake in a mezuzah. If when you check a mezuzah every once in a while, mistakes are often fatal because all the words have to be written in order. So the only way to fix a mistake typically is to erase from the bottom all the way up to that word and then rewrite everything, which is available only if there's no name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So if the mistake is too high and the mezuzah is typically unfixable because it has to be considered. I do not remember. It's a great question. Does the Megillah have to be considered? I'm almost certainly, I take that back. The almost certainly the Megillah does not create inconsistent. Like a Sefer Torah. Like a Sefer Torah. Like a Sefer Torah. That's interesting. You're saying that also fits with the fact that Megillah doesn't require a Kasidra, I believe. Okay? to check out. So that's interesting. And that way, it's more like a sefer Torah than a mezuzah. Yes, thank you. Okay, so now let's take what we have. So what has emerged from the halachic details, we came to conceptual halachic categories, we came to lamdas, we came to appreciate that we can think about Torah and Megillah, Esther, I should say, Torah and Esther, for two different dimensions, two different facets. There's the physical document, and then there's the quality of the text. Is Megillah fully or only partially like Torah? Is Megillah compared to Torah through the term Sefer or through the term Divrei Shalom Emes? Well, it depends which facet you're looking at. Physical document, half and half. 1 foot in, 1 foot out. The quality of text, absolute. Here the Briskerov leaves us. What does this mean? What's the meaning? The Rav of Soloveitchik, Yashaber, nephew, incidentally, of the Briskerov, used to often speak about the philosophy of the halacha. If you want to understand the moral, ethical, religious principles that the Torah is seeking to convey, one of the surest ways to do that is to do what we're doing right now, to analyze together a sugya, to look at the details of halacha, and then to the point where you can pull back and you see big picture ideas. Often those halachic concepts will also convey a certain hashkafic meaning as well. And I think this sugya is very ripe for us to do that over the next couple of minutes. I want to be sensitive to time. So over the next 4 or 5 minutes, let's pull this together. And let's come back to where we started and begin to appreciate a little more of the profundity of Purim on this early Adar Sunday. What does this mean? Is Megillah like Torah? Is Megillah not like Torah? Well, the content is fully Torah. But in terms of physical documents, half and half. I would suggest that if a picture is worth 1,000 words, that one image of I'm looking at a thing that looks sort of like, and we're going to do that very soon. We're going to look at a Megillah for the 20th, 30th, 100th, 200th time, but with fresh eyes. Because what we're going to see is, it looks sort of like a Sefer Torah. It doesn't look fully like a Sefer Torah, but it's Torah. The content is, the text is profoundly Torah. The physical document is half and half. I would suggest that image and these halachos capture exactly what Purim is about and the unique juncture that the story of Purim is at in the overall arc of Jewish history. The story of Purim happens almost 1,000 years after Maamar Har Sinai. The story of Purim happens right before the end of the Galus Babel, the end of the Galus that lay between the destruction of the first days of Mikdash and the building of the second days of Mikdash. Gemara tells us in Zvachim that Kadosh Baruch Hu was already ready earlier to have pulled the plug on prophecy. Kadosh Baruch Hu kept it going a little bit longer. Another couple of years, he sent the last three Nevi'im, Chagai, Zechariah, and Malachi, were sent with the Jewish people, were enabled to be Nevi'im, to be prophets, and were sent with the Jewish people in order to enable the building of the second Beis HaMikdash under prophetic aegis. But the period of Nevu had really come to an end. HaKadosh Baruch Hu was shifting the way he related to us. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in other words, was choosing at that point to pull back from direct communication with human beings. Direct communication with the Jewish people. HaKadosh Baruch Hu was taking a step back. And at this point, HaKadosh Baruch Hu was saying to us, you're going to switch also. You're going to shift as well. Tzadok HaKohen Lublin talks about the parallel shift that the Gemara talks about in Sanhedrin and Yuma, throughout the period of the first Beis HaMikdash, you learn the same from Malachim, and there are so many references to this, to pagan idolatry, and Jews were so taken by it, there was almost like a carnal desire to worship idols that we just don't get. That part of Tanakh, it doesn't resonate. And Gemara says in one place in Masechet Sanhedrin, that one of the Amoraim is learning, say, from Malachim, and he said, look, this king Menashe, son of Chizkiyahu, had been a great tzaddik. His son Menashe is a terrible Rasha, is deeply enmeshed in Avodah Zarah. And one of the Amoraim made a disparaging comment. Oh, Menashe, Avodah Zarah. And Menashe comes to him in a dream and says, you understand, you would have lived in my day, you also would have picked up your Bekesh and run to run to worship Avodah Zarah. There was like a carnal desire for Avodah Zarah that we don't appreciate. The Gemara understands that there's a mysterious episode in Sefer Zechariah that captures that change. That there was a... The Gemara explains that enigmatic image is capturing this, that the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah prayed to HaKadosh Baruch Hu to roll back the Yetzer for Avodah Zarah. And their wish was granted. There are cultures in the world that are still enmeshed in idolatry, but in much of the Western world, and specifically, Jewish people span the globe, but Jews as a whole no longer lost the desire, the taste for Avodah Zarah. The Gemara says it changed form from idol worship to a physical, experiential, meditative, you know, worshiping of idols, to a more intellectual version of kvira, of heresy, of rejecting belief in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but not in favor of, not in an experiential, physical way, moved instead to a more intellectual realm. That change is captured as the Jews are stepping into the Bayis Sheni. That change corresponds, the change in what a Yetzer was, corresponds positively to the change in how we relate to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, how HaKadosh Baruch Hu was revealing himself to us. HaKadosh Baruch Hu was stepping away from the overtly spiritual, experiential, he will actually speak to human beings. Nevuah was ending. Not only was Nevuah ending, Rav Schechter is fond of pointing to there's a history that was written by one of the Tanaim, the Seder Olam, in which he writes, Mishemesu Chagai Zechari Malachi, when those three Nevi'im we mentioned at the very beginning of the second day of Samishu, they passed away, Batla Nevuah. That is the end of the period of Nevuah. Yikan Ve'elach, from this point and on, Hat Azna Chalashmo Divrei Chacham. From this point on, you're going to pay attention even more to the words of the rabbis, which is saying the following, that there had been Torah Shebech Sav and Torah Shebech Peh already for 1,000 years, since the days of Moshe Rabbeinu. However, for the first 1,000 years of Jewish history, from Moshe to Malachi, the focus, there had been always both Torah Shebech Sav and Torah Shebech Peh, but the focus of the Jewish people's creative energy was primarily the world of Torah Shebech Sav. We're actually composing, through Nevi'im, composing Svarim of the Tanakh. Shmuel was writing Svarim of the Tanakh, and Yeshua was writing Svarim of the Tanakh, and Chizkiyah was writing Svarim of the Tanakh, all the way through until the period of Purim. Until the period of Anshei Knesset HaGedolah. Composed this great Sanhedrin that brings us back to Eretz Yisrael, composed of names such as Ezra, Nehemiah, and Mordechai. They are the end of the period of the Nevuah. They are the end of the period of the Tanakh. Mishemesu, Chagai, Zechariah, Malachi, and those three Nevi'im were also members of the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah. Their passing marks the shift from we continue to learn Tanakh, but the focus of Kol Yisrael's creative energy shifted from Torah Shebech Sav, from composing Tanakh, to Torah Shebech Peh. From a more experiential, prophetic focus relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu to a more intellectual analysis. Torah Shebech Peh, Mishnah, Gemara is all about analysis. You look at the Tanakh and let's analyze. Let's try to put the ideas together. It's our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu is in the midst of shifting at the moment of Purim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is pulling back. He's going to stand in the shadows, and he now expects us, post-Purim, to be able to continue to have a relationship with him, a rich, deep, intellectual, spiritual, emotional relationship of Yir and of Ava. We say every day in Shema, V'ahavta Hashem Elokecha, we're meant to have a deeply emotional, caring, loving relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But it's about to shift, because he's not going to be as apparent. We just learned yesterday, and we just began yesterday, these parshas of a Mishkan. Build a Mishkan and there's visible presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's ending at the time of Purim. That's ending at the time of Purim. What Purim accomplished for the Jewish people, we've heard before that Purim is full of hidden miracles. HaKadosh Baruch Hu's name never appears. But you look back at 9-10 years of history and you see his fingerprints throughout what at the time, in real time, seemed like mere, you know, mashing the psychodynamics of the Persian court. In retrospect, you see HaKadosh Baruch Hu at work, but more subtly. Purim is a Yontif of Nisan Nistarim. That's not coincidental. It's perfectly apropos because Purim was the pivot. Purim was HaKadosh Baruch Hu inviting us, HaKadosh Baruch Hu introducing us to life is going to be different, and here's how you're going to do it well. For the first 1,000 years of Jewish history, we could go to shul, and a Navi would give a cop on the bima, and he would say, I spoke to HaKadosh Baruch Hu last night, and he told me X. Try to imagine that. That hasn't happened in over 2,000 years. That hasn't happened since shortly after the days of Purim, since the death of Chagai Zechariah Malachi. HaKadosh Baruch Hu chose to be more in the shadows and expects us to rise to the challenge to notice him in, obviously. Not just to see HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the great razzle-dazzle moments, but to be able to see HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the warp and weft and the coming and going of everyday life, to look more carefully as we practice. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us first practice in the story of Purim. You didn't see me for 10 years, but in real time, but now you looked back, and all of a sudden you put those episodes together, wow, the fingerprints of HaKadosh Baruch Hu are everywhere. But it's going to require more careful eye because HaKadosh Baruch Hu is changing the way he relates to us, and therefore changing the way we need to relate to him. It's not going to be as obvious and experiential. The Yetzer Hara changed, the focus of positive Ar Avoda changed, from Torah Shebichsav to Torah Shebapeh, from a focus on Nevuah to a focus on thought, from a focus on just seeing to a focus on seeing beyond and analyzing and noticing the subtle hints. And that's exactly what's captured in the Yontif Purim, and that's exactly what's captured in a Megillah. You're going to see the Megillah in just a couple of days, but it's going to look totally different. Because you're going to look at a Megillah and say, wow, it's a Sefer, but it's in Yigeres, but it's all Divrei Shalom V'Emes. The physical document, sort of, the content, fully Torah. Because it captures the fact that the Megillah is at the moment when we're stepping out of the period of Torah Shebichsav. We're stepping out of the period of writing Svarim, in the sense of Sifrei Tanakh. So is it a physical document like a Sefer Torah? Sort of. It's in transition. But the content is absolutely Torah. The relationship to HaKadosh Baruch Hu is unchanging. The modality changes. The genre changes. The dressing changes. The way it's presented, the levush changes. But the content is absolutely the same. And now we end, finally, with the source with which we began. We're back to dessert. He says, Megillah is forever. Megillah has an enduring power that the other Svarim and Divrei Sivim don't have. Like what? Like Hamisha Chum Shei Torah, the Rambam writes, and like Halacha Shel Torah Shebapeh. Because it lies at the nexus of the two. Megillah is at the sort of the pivot from a focus on Hamisha Chum Shei Torah, Torah Shebichzav, to Halachas of Torah Shebapeh. From experience HaKadosh Baruch Hu, here's a Jew who got a message direct from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Where you don't see HaKadosh Baruch Hu as visibly, but we can analyze and we can look carefully, we can relate to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that is the power, and that is the power of a Purim. A Purim is an opportunity to see beyond. Purim is an opportunity to see that HaKadosh Baruch Hu often chooses to mask himself. HaKadosh Baruch Hu often chooses to be in obvious, but gives us the opportunity, if we look subtly, to find him. It takes more work, but the work is endlessly rewarding. And that is part of the unique power of a Purim, to notice HaKadosh Baruch Hu in our lives in the everyday, an unbelievable power. I want to thank you so much. Once again, I want to thank the Rabbanim of the Shul. I want to thank you all for coming out this morning to join me in preparing for Purim, intellectually, spiritually, emotionally. Thank you so much. Afreilchem Purim.